do get in contact with us at Good Morning CHD, because we are going to be continuing to expose these stories. Right, now we're going to get on to PCR tests. So a lot of you have been talking about, are they safe? Are they not safe? I thought I had an injury. Maybe I did, maybe I didn't, whatever. We're going to bring on the very best, and that is James Wagoski. Welcome to the show. Good morning.
Well, thank you very much for having me. And, you know, let me just say thank you for, doing this. I very much appreciate, you raising awareness about something that unfortunately all too many people take for granted as, just being par for the course. And it's anything but.
Yeah, well, you've done quite a deep dive into this situation. And now the first thing is, people think we're crazy anyway because we're recording stories on vaccine injury and COVID shots. The minute you bring up PCR, people think you really have lost the plot. Can you talk about, first of all, where did it even come from, the PCR test? And is it even, I mean, I know this is dumb questions, but it's really important. Is it even accurate at testing if you have a for COVID or whatever COVID is?
Well, I'll go way, way, way out on a limb and go further than what you just said, because I oppose the terminology. Using the phrase PCR test is fraudulent. A lot of people in the health freedom movement who are aware of, the mRNA jabs, when they hear somebody say the COVID vaccine, a lot of people will go, wait a minute. No. They change the definition of the word vaccine. If it doesn't stop infection and doesn't stop transmission, it's not worthy of the name, okay? Well, the PCR process is very important in a laboratory. Anytime I hear somebody say PCR test, I go, no. It's not a valid test. And I think the answer to your question is it goes all the way back to Kerry Mullis, who passed away a little more than 5 years ago. But he won the Nobel Prize for his research in bringing this process to laboratory work with genetic material. So the idea is it can duplicate, multiply any genetic material. And in the process, they use a phosphorescent chemical so that as the genetic sequence is multiplied, it begins to give off light that can be measured by equipment. And it's a simple indicator of, oh, yes, we've been duplicating this specific chemical compound, and we identified it there because this light, it reached a certain threshold, and the machine can see it. That's not a diagnostic. That's not even a way of identifying an active virion. Now, there are a lot of people who question the entire idea of, whether or not viruses exist, whether or not they can cause any disease. I see the PCR fraud as a way of bringing both camps together, because it doesn't matter if you believe, the contagion story or, whether you think viruses do not exist. What I've put together, it's a very simple document. It's a notice and statement of facts. I've collected not just court cases and government documents from around the world, the FDA, the CDC, the WHO, nations, United States, Canada, the UK, Sweden, Singapore, and many other articles from peer-reviewed journals in, respected journals, where they essentially very clearly say, this is not a diagnostic test. It cannot even identify whether or not an active pathogen has been found. It's a complete and total fraud. It's a psychological operation. And so I'll try to give a slightly, connected analogy, right? If you go to the doctor and you just had, some pancakes and maple syrup for breakfast, and they do a test and they go, oh my, you've got a lot of sugar in your blood. You've got diabetes. You should be able to go, well, that test has to be put into context. What is it measuring? Does it mean I have a disease? Or is it measuring something that you're using to trick me into thinking I have a disease. So this is the evidence. This is not my opinion. This is court cases, government documents, and peer-reviewed journals. And it essentially came off of my desire to honor the memory of Kerry Mullis. I published this originally on the fifth anniversary of his passing decades ago when he was battling Fauci over AIDS and HIV. He said, you know, well, wait a minute, this PCR process that he helped, you know, design and create is not a diagnostic. But, you know, the powers that be have been using it as such for decades, you know, going all the way back to HIV and AIDS, and they're going to try to use it for Mpox, you know, which I call moneypox. The definition, according to the WHO, of a proven case of COVID or a proven case of Mpox is the PCR fraud. And so I've tried to make it easier for people. Everybody can go to PCRfraud.com, download the simple document. It's a PDF, or just send people to PCRfraud.com. Because if you don't push back against this and share the information with people who are still trying to use this, this is what they're using to check poultry operations for bird flu, or, you know, dairy operations, or, you know, your milk in the store for raw milk, Mpox, you know, all over the world. This is the fraud that they're using. And I think it's the linchpin or the cornerstone or the bottom card in their house of cards, that if we pull this out and people go, no, wait a minute, PCR, that's not a test, that's fraud. What are you doing? No, the answer is no. And it's not just that it's fraudulent and it's not a test and it doesn't, you know, tell you anything, you know, really true. It actually causes great harm in both physical, emotional, psychological, financial ways. This is the case-demic fraud machine that they use to scare people. But it literally, you know, sticking it into the nose in this direction when it's supposed to be put in this direction, according to their, you know, techniques, it has been malpractice upon millions, if not billions, of people. And the harm is just, you know, off the charts.
I can't even watch that image. It's the beginning of, it's the root cause of all the problem. You're absolutely right. If we take that out, because all the stories that we were hearing on the bus over and over again, it all starts with that COVID test. And in hospitals, they were sticking it in them over and over and over again until they got what they said was a positive result. And then that led to their death. It all started with this PCR test. What can we, the people, do to stop this, James? And also, where can we get hold of that documentation that you just put on the screen?
Getting a hold of it should be pretty easy. It's just PCRfraud.com. You can just download the document right there. It starts with, quite frankly, knowledge and information and awareness. And so it's one of these things where when the light bulb goes off and you learn something that is the opposite of what your assumptions and your paradigm had been in the past, there's usually a sound that comes out of people's head. They read through this and they see it's not a diagnostic. It doesn't work. It doesn't tell you if you're infected. And all of that bounces off because you've been pre-programmed to believe that this is a valid test. I think there's two things that really did it for me, even though I've known all of this going all the way back to, you know, the time of AIDS and HIV in the 80s and the 90s. Number one, any test has an error, you know, amount, whether it's a 0.5% or 1% or whatever it might be. And if you remember good old Deborah Birx, who was a member of the COVID task force, early on, she presented, you know, Donald Trump was standing right by her side and she was presenting to the you know, nation. She said something that I think went right past almost everybody. She said, well, you know, if the specificity of the test is 99%, which means it's wrong 1% of the time, and 1% of the population is actually infected, if you believe the contagion myth, then a positive result is 50-50. It might be a true positive, it might be a false positive. And you just go, how does that math work out? Well, I've tried to explain that math in the video on PCR fraud, but you just have to stop and go, wait a minute. A positive result could be wrong 50% of the time. And quite frankly, it could be even more than that. And if you look at the PCR process, it's not a diagnostic. So it's always a false positive. And so, number one, the math at some point, you go, oh my God, they're just tricking me with statistics. There's a famous picture of Bill Gates with a book in the background, you know, How to Lie with Statistics. Well, this is how they do it. If you had a pregnancy test and it was 99% accurate, and you gave it to, you know, 1 million men. Now I know, you know, in today's world, men can get pregnant, okay? But if any test is wrong 1% of the time, if you gave it to, you know, 100 or 1,000 or 1 million men, 1% of them would be told by the test that they're pregnant. Now, that's a, you know, silly little answer or analogy, but the error rate in any testing, and in the PCR process, it's 100%. But the error rate in any testing, if you do mass testing to millions of people, you can create a pandemic anytime you want based on the error rate of the test. And once people realize that that is how big medicine tricks you, take a cholesterol test, a high blood pressure test, a sugar test, a mammogram, a PSA, you know, prostate specific antigen test. It's a customer acquisition tool. They go, oh, you have to take this high technology test that you don't understand. And that's how they trick people into believing that they have an asymptomatic case of whatever the heck it is they're testing for. Don't fall for the fraudulent PCR test, and don't fall for any of the other tests, you know, quite frankly.
Even if you have to lose your job, I'm going to remind people of that story that we did where a woman was doing the PCR test on Zoom and she then had an anaphylactic shock and her life is all but over because of that. So it's the same thing with the jab, right? Don't settle, people. If James is saying it's dangerous, I'm going to do research on it. James, tell me about some of the injuries you've seen from the PCR test.
Well, I think your next guest is going to be able to, you know, do even more than
Yes.
that. I deal as much as possible with providing evidence. And so I watched an interview with a woman who had been harmed, and it triggered me to go looking. And if you go to PCRfraud.com, just scroll down a little bit, there's a link to another article with, again, not my opinion, not people's stories, but case studies that have been published going back, you know, to very early on in this debacle. In peer-reviewed journals of, you know, doctors reporting on the harm that was caused. Now, very specifically with the nasal pharynx use through the nose, the way I'll make fun of myself with my big nose, okay? I don't believe in the process at all, but if you follow their guidelines, if you were to push your nose up and out of the way, the fleshy part of your nose, there's a pathway straight horizontally in to the very top of the back of your throat. Well, what they're actually supposed to do is have people tilt their head forward, push the nose out of the way, and go straight to the back of your throat. Why they don't just take a throat culture, you know, I have no idea. It's torture, it's some weird, you know, psychological game that they're playing. But you see, a lot of times people have it pushed up, you know, straight up the nose. That's how most people think, you know, their nose is opening, functions. People have had it literally break the very soft, spongy bone that, you know, is between your sinus cavity and your brain, and they leak cerebral spinal fluid, and it's horrific. You could get a world of problems. And, you know, yes, surgeons can repair it, but it's assault and battery. It's, you know, take a sword, you know, at the very bottom of the article on injuries, I have a medieval helmet that has a block over the nose. It's kind of like you need to wear one of those old medieval helmets to protect you from, you know, a jousting injury. They're coming at you with a very small sword that may very well have chemicals and other compounds on it in a manner that is quite frankly malpractice. If it's going up, they don't know what they're doing, or they are trying to harm you. And, you know, the first issue across the board, and the recent court case that kind of triggered me to do all of this in Canada, is a woman won her case saying no one has a right to inject anything into your body, period, end of story. And so she rejected, you know, the insertion of a swab into her nose. She was fined, you know, several thousand dollars. She lost the original case before a justice of the peace, but upon appeal, won her case because the law, even in Canada, the Quarantine Act says no one can insert anything into your body against your will. And once you know that, you know, your body is sacrosanct, you know, my body, my choice, you know, you have every right in the world. I don't like to use the phrase informed consent. I use the phrase informed dissent. Doesn't matter what your information is. The answer is no.
James, what do you think they're going to do in the next few months? What? I mean, we obviously don't know, but what is your, what do you think?
You know, I really don't speculate. I don't get into predicting the future, but I can say pretty safely that they're going to lie.
Right. And with the PCR tests, I know we shouldn't say PCR tests, but they're killing loads of animals, cows and chickens and all this kind of stuff. Is it the same kind of test they're using? Is it the same one?
In many cases, you would have to get into all the specifics. You know, they want to test, you know, in your veterinarian's office. So, you know, be careful when you bring your cat or your dog or your bird or whatever. A lot of times they'll take the animal, take it into a back room, you know, to do whatever it is they do. And you're not even aware of what they're doing once your pet is out of sight. In farming settings, they're looking for a snippet of genetic material, claiming fraudulently that justifies the murder of hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of animals. They're doing wastewater treatment, you know, testing. The WHO found polio in the wastewater in Gaza, and they want to subject everyone in Gaza to polio vaccines. Well, in the international health regulations, one of the amendments was they crossed out the need to report natural polio virus because the only one circulating is from the vaccines themselves. And so this fraud is just across the world. And this is what they want, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars for in Africa, to do more and more and more testing. This is how they run their propaganda machine. Across the board, they trick people into believing that this technology that most people don't comprehend or understand properly is how they can determine whether or not they can do, you know, horrible things to you if you let them. Don't fall for the fraud.
All right, James, so how can people follow you on? You've got your brilliant Substack, so, and I think that's up on the screen. But also, just one more time, the PCR address.
JamesRogusky.substack.com. The hard part is spelling my last name. But PCRfraud.com is just one article on my Substack. So if you just remember PCRfraud.com, it'll get you all to the same place. And, you know, I always give everybody my phone number. People can call me directly. It's 310-619-3055. If you're outside the United States, you can text me or use Signal or Telegram or WhatsApp. If you have any questions, I'd love to talk to anybody who, you know, wants to help push back against what they continue to try to, you know, lie to us about.
I bet you get some interesting texts and calls giving that number out. James, thank you for all the hard work you do. I really enjoy following you and watching you on various platforms. So thank you for everything that you do for us all.
Really right back at you, Polly. Thanks for all that you do.
All right. Well, now, so We are going to go to a story, a PCR test story. But I just want to say, if you have been affected by PCR tests, or is it, there's something that you want to talk to us about, do contact us at Good Morning CHD, or James, indeed. But we do need to do much more on this, because this is serious stuff. Right, let's go straight to our guest, Yvette. Yvette, welcome to the show.
Hi, Polly.
Thank you for being here. Now, this is a
Sure.
story about PCR injury, correct?
Correct, yes.
Do you want to talk us through it? It's not just you, it's your daughter-in-law as well.
Yes, there's a little bit more to it than that, but I'm happy to talk to you about it.
Okay, so tell us why you even took a test in the first place.
Sure. So my son, this was October 21. Okay, and it was in the middle of, the vaccine mandates and that sort of thing. And my son, his wife, and my grandson were living with us in our guest house while he was in escrow. So I think he stayed here with us for like 3 months. So he was very concerned about having to get the vaccine. He was working for a large bank. I'm not going to say the name. But anyway, so he was very worried about having to get the vaccine to go back to work. So my brother-in-law is a doctor, and he suggested that he get a COVID test. And if he tested positive, then he could present that test to his employer and say, well, I don't need the vaccine because I've already had COVID. So he went ahead and got a bunch of COVID tests. I believe there was four or five, and he brought them home. And we all took them to help him. We're just hoping he would test positive, and that would pretty much take care of the vaccine mandate that he was very afraid of. We don't vaccinate. My grandchildren are not vaccinated. My kids were in the 80s, and they all had injuries. So we're not a family that vaccinates or even believe in the PCR test, because I kind of knew everything that James talked about with you. I had watched House of Cards, House of Numbers, I'm sorry, back, I don't know, like 10 years ago. So I was never really concerned about COVID or getting sick or anything like that. But we took the test to see if one of us would test positive to help my son. So he came with, he brought the test. I don't know where he got them, really. I could find out, but I don't know right now where he got them. And we all took the test. And I and my daughter-in-law immediately had an allergic reaction. I'm talking within seconds. And then from then, I didn't really have a nosebleed, but anytime that I would blow my nose or something like that, I'd have blood. And then it went down my throat, it exploded in my head, and we just immediately got sick to the point where I couldn't get out of bed for 3 weeks. And my sister-in-law, I mean my daughter-in-law, she had a little bit of different experience. She wasn't as fatigued as I was, but she just couldn't think. She couldn't think straight. She couldn't focus on anything, and still to this day, she gets scabs in her nose from that test. I had scabs in my nose for many months, but I actually recovered, from the injury that I got from the test. But then after the third week of being completely sick in my bed, I couldn't get up. I didn't cough. I didn't have a fever. It was nothing like that. It was just fatigue, severe fatigue, to where I could barely even just get up to take a shower. And then I think it was like either week three or four, my hair started falling out. And I'm not really sure if it was from the shock of being so sick or if it was from the poison. I can't tell you why. And then, we just continue to get better and better, but very slowly. And still to this day, I feel I could actually kind of feel it. I could feel it. It's hard to explain, but there's just something wrong. It's a feeling in my head and in my face that I just didn't have before that test.
But I've never taken a PCR test, and I have a feeling most of our viewers probably haven't either. Talk us through how you did it. So a package comes.
Right. So we all did it together. So we just, followed the instructions, and we just put it up our nose. And
How far back did you go?
I went pretty bad. I went far. I think I went too far. My husband took it, and he didn't really, not much happened to him, but he didn't go as far as I did. I think I punctured something, or I believe that I went too far with it. And so anyway, so we took it, and then I immediately had a reaction to it immediately, and so did my daughter-in-law. And it's kind of ironic, but we all took it and we all had a reaction to it, but my grandson didn't take it, and my grandson was fine. And he was in the house with us. There was no transmission of viruses or anything. This was very clear, a reaction to the test.
All right, James, can you come back on again? He's just still there. Here's a question I've got. Why are the people who are not medically trained doing tests and sticking these things up their noses? That in itself is dangerous, surely.
Yep, yes.
The answer is obviously you're correct. It's the type of thing where the psychological programming to override your inherent understanding of your own body. If you're ill, if you're sick, you know it. Okay. There was a couple of months ago an outbreak of cholera in the African nation of Malawi. And I'm not a doctor. I don't profess to be an expert on cholera. But the first thing that the WHO did was send 1.4 million tests. You know, I'm pretty sure if you have cholera, you know it. You don't need a test. And so the idea that you can, do contact tracing and try to identify, people who may have been exposed flies in the face of reality. In Kenya, with the current mpox, they claim that there are two cases in all of Kenya, and 42 of the 44 suspected cases tested negative. So they're having trouble with mpox because the testing isn't justifying their, case-demic attempt. But think about this. There's 1-point-something billion people in Africa. There's a lot of an outbreak of mpox in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, but in, somewhat neighboring Kenya, there's two cases, two truck drivers who were ill. And the WHO wants over $100 million to oversee this. They need more tests. They need vaccines. This is a manufactured crisis in many ways when you compare it to the vast number of people who die from, heart disease and cancer and, tuberculosis and malaria and so forth and so on. This is just a money-making venture. I refer to it as moneypox because my understanding is that the JYNNEOS, Bavarian Nordic vaccine is $100 a dose. Wow. You know how much profit is going on that? Their stock price, skyrocketed in the last month. Fear, is a way of extracting money from government on behalf of their people. But, what is it that they're really doing in Africa? How are we ever really going to know? If we don't have, journalists on the ground reporting what is actually happening, it's all a made-up theatrical production being put on by the mainstream media.
Thank you, James. Let's get a vet back on. How are you feeling to this day? Have you still got symptoms from that?
Every once in a while, I do feel like there's still something going on up, in my nose, and sometimes I might get like pressure in my eyes, and but I feel like I've pretty much recovered from it. My daughter-in-law still has a lot of problems. She's still scabbed. She's still scab. Her nose is still scabbed from time to time, and she had. At one point, she had some problems, like with like her, when she ate, she felt sick. I wish she would have come on because she could explain it to you better than I can. But we just had a bad experience with it, and I'm mad at myself because I wasn't I wasn't afraid of COVID or, any of that stuff. And I just did it for my son to protect him from something that was so unreasonable to begin with, to mandate a vaccine just so that you could go back to work. And so
Right, so
that's pretty, yeah.
they basically had everyone by their short and curlies, as we say in England. But basically, I think going forward, if this happens again, what stage do you say no, even if you do lose your job or protecting your son in law, whatever it is that makes someone take a test that starts this cascade of craziness?
Yeah, no, we'll never take a test again. Like I said earlier, my grandchildren are not vaccinated, and we're not even really 100% sure the viruses exist, and we're not worried about getting sick from a virus. So even if my son is to lose his job, I will say no, I guarantee you, because that was a lot to go through. I was sick, I own a business and I was sick for a very long time. And I believe that my business suffered from that. And not to mention how sick I was. I was so sick for 3 weeks. I just couldn't even get up out of bed. Headaches, the nosebleed kind of thing that kept happening. It would even go down my throat. I would feel like some sort of sour kind of. Just I would swallow. I don't know if I was swallowing my own blood. I'm not really sure. And then my hair fell out. So
And how, when you tell people this story, how are you treated?
they tell me that I had COVID, and I said, well, I mean, if you believe that, that's fine. But I mean, my test came back negative. So I don't really argue with people too much, but people don't believe me. They don't, and they never have. I've told my story to several people, and they just said, oh no, you probably had COVID.
Well, we believe you at Children's Health Defence, and so do our
Thank
viewers.
you.
And you're not on your own. There are other people who've had reactions like that. And listen, is there anything else you want to add to this, Yvette?
No, I'm good. I thank you so much for your service. I mean, I've watched all your videos, and I hope this helps someone not to take a test, because there is no guarantee that you're not going to get hurt. There is something at the end of those swabs or whatever. Mine was more of a plastic kind of tip with like kind of almost like little spikes on it. And I think maybe the cotton swabs, I don't know, maybe you wouldn't get as hurt as I did with what I took. But I just be careful with those tests. They're no joke. It is no joke. Those tests can make you very sick, because they made me and my family sick.
Right. Thank you so much, Yvette, for that warning and for telling your story. We really appreciate you coming on. And to our viewers, well, what can we trust these days? They're even saying that they're putting these vaccines on plasters or band-aids, as you call them. So really, it makes sense not to trust a test. Why would you
No, yeah, no.
go there? So thank you to James Ogusky for educating us on this as well. I'm sure many of you will go there and do more research on that. Now, we have a food symposium by Dr. Meryl Nass coming up, and she has worked incredibly hard, as have our staff here at CHDTV. This is going to be on September the 6th and 7th. We're streaming it live on chd.tv, and it starts, I think, at 11 o'clock Eastern. But if I've got that wrong, I'll correct it at some point. But go over there and sign up for the text alerts as well, and we will let you know when we are live. Yes, it is 11 Eastern, says Lou. So make sure that you tune in for that. It's coming up very soon. And now we are going to go to our EMR update. And this is from our amazing EMR department at Children's Health Defence. But I will say goodbye to you all. Pray.